Send me wine up the ting till it pile up. Big bumper girl, just a wine and a oil up. They must spoil me a stock till it pile up. My money no, so it my
you
money.
Dance like you mean it. Dance like you on fire and you want me to know. You move like you mean it, shawty. See the look on your face. You don't wanna fight, I wanna make love, maybe both. Looking at you, watching the way you wind it and pop it. One more time, go wind and pop it. Yeah, yeah. Remember that drink got me feeling alright. Any little thing, I could watch it all night. Pull up on that bumper, girl, I just might. Pull up on that bumper, girl, I just might. Baby, push back when I jump behind it. When I jump behind it. So when I jump behind it, push back on me. So baby, push back when I jump behind it. Baby, let me know you like it. Tonight, let's give them something to see. Everybody's singing.
You're listening to Mayo on CITR 101.9 on Marco's AstroTalk. Push back.
Bar, couple shots, no chasing. My booty amazing. Come on, baby, chase it. Back to the floor, give us space. And
looking at me, watching the way I wanted him popping. One more time, I wanted him popping. Yeah, baby, that drink got me feeling alright. Pretty little thing, you could watch me all night. Pull up on his bomb.
Marco, and you're listening to Astro Talk with Mayo. There again. I review a few things I did last week. Okay, I'll turn it off. Now, I was talking about neutrinos coming from black holes and things like that. So it seems neutrinos come from a lot of things. As we know, neutrinos are tiny particles, sometimes called ghost particles. They're almost massless, and they go right through us. So I hold my thumb perpendicular to the sun. About 6 trillion neutrinos have gone through my thumb every second. So the more I talk, the more neutrinos go through me and my whole body. So they're hard to track, and they're hard to get a hold of. And I talked about something called the proton-proton chain last week. That is, now I see there's a couple of proton-proton chains. There's the proton-proton chain, the proton-proton 1 branch, the proton-proton 2 branch, the proton-proton 3 branch, and the proton-proton 4 branch, whatever that is. Okay, so what is the proton-proton chain? In the center of the sun, in the core, you got pretty hot temperatures, over 10 million degrees. So atoms are flying around, in particular hydrogen atoms, so protons are flying around. They've been ionized, so they've lost their electron. So you got a hydrogen atom, and it, let's say you have a proton. So this is a proton-proton chain. And the reason I'm describing it, I want to talk about how neutrinos are made. So two protons collide, they make a helium-2, but the helium-2, undergoes beta decay to a deuterium. So you make, in the end process, you got two protons collide, you got a heavy hydrogen plus a positron plus a neutrino. So that's your first neutrino is made there. And this, I don't know how long it takes, but now the second step is very slow. And it could take 10,000, 50,000, 100,000 years. So these forces that are happening in the core of the sun are these reactions. Some of them are very slow, but because 600 million tons of hydrogen is fused every second, then there's a lot of stuff going on there. So you have a heavy hydrogen with a positron and a neutrino and some energy. But what happens, the positron, it will find an electron and annihilate each other and make two gamma rays plus energy. So it will, now you have a deuterium, heavy water. It hits another hydrogen, another proton, and it makes helium-3 plus a gamma ray plus energy. And the end step is the helium 3 finds another helium 3, collides, reacts, and you make a helium 4, and you get two protons and some energy. So in the end, what you have is two neutrinos are made through the reaction. And because 600 million tons of hydrogen is being fused every second, and then there's four steps. So first you have 600 million tons of hydrogen being fused together. Then there's another three steps. So there's lots of neutrinos that are made in the center of the sun. So the neutrinos leave the center of the sun right away and they head towards Earth. Or they head in all directions, but some of them head towards Earth. And imagine 6 trillion neutrinos are going through your thumb every second. So that's a lot of neutrinos being put out by the sun every second. So that's how neutrinos are made. But we also read last week they are made in the center of black holes and the collision of maybe neutron stars and a whole host of other things. So neutrinos are tiny particles that one of our scientists from Canada won the Nobel Physics Prize a few years ago because he said, I think his name was McDougall or McDonald, I'll look it up later. He said neutrinos have mass, and they do have mass. So they switch between, there's three flavors and there's three antiparticles. So there's six types of neutrinos and all. So we were talking about neutrinos last week, and I made some comments about the proton-proton cycle, and I was caught off guard. I had my friend India here. She was talking too, and she's lovely, so I was distracted, and I didn't explain it as good as I could have. So anyway, you have, in the end process, there's four protons that undergo reactions, and they make a helium 4 nucleus without its electrons because it's hot. So what happens is there's also photons, gamma ray photons, created in the proton-proton cycle. I believe there's two of them. And what happens is these are absorbed, reabsorbed, and readmitted, emitted. And so these photons bounce around in the center of the sun like a drunken walk. Sometimes it could take 10,000 years or 100,000 years or maybe a million years to reach the surface of the sun and then eventually reach us. So once they leave the surface of the sun, it takes 8.5 minutes for the photons to get to us. But they undergo this drunken walk, and they are inside the sun for tens of thousands of years, as opposed to neutrinos, which just, they take off. Nothing absorbs them in the center of the sun, or very little absorbs them. And we know here on Earth, it's hard to track them. It can go through a mile of lead without even blinking. That's a neutrino. So now we talked about neutrinos. This is called the proton-proton cycle, or the proton-proton reaction, which is a chain of thermonuclear reactions that is a chief source of energy radiated by the sun and other cool main sequence stars. Another sequence of thermonuclear reactions, called the carbon cycle, provides much of the energy released by hotter stars. So in the proton-proton cycle, four hydrogen nuclei or protons are combined to form one helium nucleus. 0.7% of the original mass is lost mainly by conversion into heat energy, but some energy escapes in the form of neutrinos. So that's our proton-proton cycle. Now let's go to NASA.gov and see what NASA's talking about today. So I think I'm going to talk about astrophysics and stuff like that. So let's look at this. This is dated July 18, which is yesterday, on www.nasa.gov. And it says, Chandra may have the first evidence of a young star devouring a planet. Isn't that cool? A star devouring a planet. I hope there's no life on that planet. Are there goners? So anyway, it's July 18th under the topic heading of Chandra X-ray or Chandra X-ray telescope. I guess it's more properly called an observatory. So the article is titled, Chandra may have first evidence of a young star devouring a planet. So let's look at the picture. There's a picture, artist illustration, depicts the destruction of a young planet or planets, which scientists may have witnessed for the first time using data from NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory. So here they have some kind of graph here. It looks quite complicated, so I don't know what it is. It's a X-ray brightness as opposed to energy. It shows a curve here. So I guess from that, they can say, ah, a planet has been devoured. I don't know how they do that, so let's read the article. So again, Chandra may have first evidence of a young star devouring a planet. It's on www.nasa.gov, July 18, 2018. Look at this. There's another article. This sounds interesting. Red nuggets are galactic gold for astronomers. Okay, so let's look at that later. So right now, we're going to go, Chandra may have first evidence of a young star devouring a planet, July 18th, 2018 on www.nasa.gov. So here goes the article. Scientists may have observed for the first time the destruction of a young planet or planets around a nearby star. Observation from NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory indicate that the parent star is now in a process of devouring the planetary debris. Is it planetary debris or planet? The discovery gives insight into the processes affecting the survival of infant planet. I wonder how many planets our star devoured when it was forming. That's an interesting question. Since 1937, astronomers have puzzled over the curious variability of a young star named RWAUR, big A, located about 450 light years from Earth. Every few decades, the star's optical light has faded briefly before brightening again. In recent years, astronomers have observed the star dimming more frequently and for longer periods. Where are we? There we are. Using Chandra, a team of scientists may have uncovered what caused the star's most recent dimming event, a collision of two infant planetary bodies, including at least one object large enough to be a planet. So could collision of two planets dim a star? Because the planets are so much smaller than the star. As the resulting planetary debris fell into the star, it would generate a thick veil of dust and gas, temporarily obscuring the star's light. So says Hans Moritz Gunther, a research scientist in MIT's Cavell Institute for Astrophysics and Space Research, and quote, computer simulations have long predicted that planets can fall into a young star, but we have never before observed that. If our interpretation of the data is correct, this would be the first time that we directly observed the young star devouring a planet or planets, end quote. The star's previous dimming events may have been caused by similar smash-ups of either two planetary bodies or large remains of past collisions that met head-on and broke apart again. So let's stop for a second here. Scientists often look at a star that's far away, and they look for a planet to occult that star. So that means pass in front of the star and pass in between us and the star. So what happens is that when the planet does that, it temporarily, during its transit across the face of the star, it will dim the light coming from the star. But again, this dimming is so very, very small, it's hard to detect. But what scientists can do, each time the planet passes in front of the star in its orbit, it dims the light of the star a little bit. So they can see these blip, 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 blip at a constant rate, and they can say, okay, that's a planet. But now they're saying that when two planets collide, their debris can dim a star. So that's a different one. How can they distinguish how a planet is crossing a star, so it dims the light? Okay, but now they're saying two planets are colliding, and because of the collision, all this dust and gas is thrown up, and that will temporarily dim the star, or dim the light from the star. But I don't know what it says here, if the stars are colliding, and then they eventually fall into the star. That might happen. Okay, so now get back to the article. We're going to look at the star, big R, big W, AURA. Okay, so RWAURA is located in the Taurus Auriga dark clouds, which host stellar nurseries containing thousands of infant stars. So stars can be infants too. Isn't that cool? Very young stars unlike our relatively mature sun, are still surrounded by a rotating disk of gas and clumps of material, ranging inside from small dust grains to pebbles, and possibly fledgling planets. These disks last for about 5 million to 10 million years. So what they're looking at, the star RW, A-U-R-A, is a young star where it still has this planetary disk, our protoplanetary disk, and it's got debris in that. So I guess that would dim light from the star as well. So this is, the disk lasts for about 5 to 10 million years. RWRAURA is estimated to be several million years old and is still surrounded by a disk of dust and gas. The star and its binary companion, RWAURB, are both about the same mass as the sun. So isn't that interesting? You got a star, RWAURA, and a companion, RWAURB. That's interesting. I wonder how any planets could survive in a two-star system, because they'd be tugged this way and tugged that way, and they might eventually be thrown out of the system. Okay, so what are we going to do now? I think we're going to go for a break, and we're going to come back after that, and we'll see if I can find my favorite guy. Who's my favorite guy? The angry listener. But maybe they took him off because I play him all the time. So people got tired of listening to the angry listener. So let's listen to Flex Your Head. So I guess Flex Your Head is metal. It's about heavy metal show. So this is Marco. You are listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
The hardcore stuff is just is fast, very aggressive and loud, you know, music, angry music.
I am your host, Mr. Steeston Mike. Welcome to the Flex Your Head Show on CITR 101.9 FM here in Vancouver. I'm here every Tuesday.
6 to 8 p.m.
Playing some punk and hardcore for you. If you want to hear something, feel free to give me a call at 604-822-2487 or swing by flexyourhead.net and send us an email with a request.
Flex Your Head!
Old or New Testament?
I think the New Testament.
The question is, Pilot, you remember Pilot from the New Testament?
Pontius Pilate, he fiddled while...
Just a minute, let me ask the question, then you can give me the answer, okay? Did Pilate want Jesus to be crucified?
Pontius Pilate washed his hands of it.
So did he want him to be crucified?
Yeah.
No. No. No.
Well, tune in every Friday afternoon, 3:30 to the Nightwatch Show on CITR.
Well, find a good church. It'll help you.
Is your vision getting a little bit hazy? Or if you're feeling a bit funny, get your friends and listen to CITR 101.9 on AstroTalk with Marco at UBC.
Soundtrack to your life, perhaps a song from a film or a tune from TV. My name is Gap. Exploding Head Movies is here to give you sounds from the cinema, along with the songs that will be defining your future, and those forgotten classics that need a little rescue.
Yeah. Come on, baby. Come on. I won't let you down. Follow me.
Loading Head Movies, Monday, 7 to 9 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Welcome back. This is Marco on AstroTalk. I couldn't find my angry listener, so I'm angry now. So I had to hear some noise, so why not hear Exploding Heads? So tomorrow there is a special event. Let me open my email. I got emailed from, what's it called again? Triumph. So Triumph is the Tri-University Mison facility. It's here in UBC. It's a cyclotron which accelerates particles to close to the speed of light, smashes them together, and then they see what happens. So just wait. I'm trying to see. They are having a special event tomorrow night, and I'll tell you guys about it right now. Come on, email open. Where is it? Okay. It's being stubborn with me. It's being slow. Okay, where are we? Triumph, there. Okay, it says, Journey to a Galaxy Far, Far Away. So Journey with Triumph. So it says, Join us for an outdoor screening of Star Wars The Last Jedi. This is Friday, July 20th, and its movie begins after dusk, sunset at 9:10 in Westbrook Village, besides Hundo Park. I don't know where that is, but it says Triumph in Westbrook Village in partnership with the University Neighborhoods Association are hosting an outdoor movie on the night of Friday, July 20th. That's tomorrow. Bring a lawn chair or a picnic blanket, grab a free bag of popcorn, and enjoy a free outdoor screening of Star Wars The Last Jedi. So again, that's Friday, July 20th. Time is 9 p.m. Location, Westbrook Village, Lot 4. On the corner of Burney Avenue and Shrum Lane. See map below. It cost. How much does this stuff all cost us? It is free. Amazing that. Free. Street parking is available in Westbrook Village, and there is a construction lot open next to the venue. So the screening is presented as part of Triumph's 50th anniversary program. Celebrate 50 years of science with impact by visiting triumph.com. We hope to see you there. So, everybody, you got to be there. So, remember, it's tomorrow night in Westbrook Village, Lot 4, wherever that is, on Burney Avenue and Shrum Lane. So, they sent me an email. Isn't that nice of them? They've invited me. So, what I'm doing is I'm inviting everybody else if they want to come and see The Last Jedi. So, The Last Jedi is... I forget what the movie before The Last Jedi, I'll look it up, but that I think was a better movie. It was with, I'm trying to remember her name. She's the hero. Last Jedi. The Force Awakens, maybe? Okay, let's see. Hang on. I think it was called The Force Awakens. Now that was a good, movie, and we got introduced to BB-8 from the classic trilogy to The Force Awakens and the comics, novels, and games. This is what you need to know before episode 8. So they're going to show episode 8 tomorrow. And the one just before that was episode 7, which was The Force Awakens. So that was a very good movie. I really liked that. So let's get back to our talking here about Chandra. So remember, Chandra was a famous scientist, Chandra Shekhar. So they named the telescope after him. So they're now studying a star, RWAURA, and it has a twin or a companion star about the same size, RWAURB. Makes sense. They're about 450 light years away. They circle each other, and apparently they're young stars. So material around the star is still going around, big disk of matter, and things are colliding, so they're seeing dimming in the star system. So RWAURA is estimated to be several million years old and is still surrounded by a disk of dust and gas. The star and its binary companion, RWAURB, are both about the same mass as the Sun. The noticeable dips in the optical brightness of RWAURA that occurred every few decades, each lasted for about a month. Then in 2011, the behavior changed. The star dimmed again, this time for about 6 months. The star eventually brightened, only to fade again in mid-2014. In November 2016, the star returned to its full brightness, and then in January 2017, it dimmed again. So this star is brightening and dimming. And what has happened is someone's been observing these things for about 7 or 8 years. Wow, that's real dedication, isn't it? Hats off to these people. So they're seeing occasional dimming, and they're trying to explain it. Chandra was used to observe the star during an optically bright period in 2013, and then dim periods in 2015 and 2017, when a decrease in X-rays was also observed. I wonder why X-rays are coming from a star. But anyway, because the X-rays come from the hot outer atmosphere of the star, that's the explanation, changes in the X-ray spectrum, the intensity of X-rays measured at different wavelengths over these observations were used to probe the density and composition of the absorbing material around the star. The team found that the dips in both optical and X-ray light are caused by dense gas obscuring the star's light. The observation in 2017 showed strong emission from iron atoms, indicating that the disk contained at least 10 times more iron than in the 2013 observation during a bright period. So let's read that again. The team found that was dips in both optical and X-ray light are caused by dense gas obscuring the star's light. The observation in 2017 showed strong emission from iron atoms. I wonder why a lot of iron atoms would be there. Interesting. Indicating the disk contained at least 10 times more iron than in the 2013 observation during a bright period. So why would it contain at least 10,000 times more iron? I hope they tell us. It's got me on pins and needles at the edge of my seat. Gunther and colleagues suggest the, here we go, here's the explanation. Gunther and colleagues suggest that the excess iron was created when two planetesimals, or infant planetary bodies, collided. If one or both planetary bodies are made partly of iron, their smash-up could release a large amount of iron into the star's disk and temporarily obscure its light as the material falls into the star. A less favored explanation is that small grains of particles such as iron can become trapped in parts of, where are we? In parts of a disk. If the disk structure changes suddenly, such as when the star's partner star passes close by, the resulting tidal forces might release the trapped particles, creating an excess of iron that can fall into the star. Okay, let's read that again. So, a less favorite explanation is small grains of particles, such as iron, can become trapped in parts of a disk. But these are small amounts. These are not big amounts that would be in a planet. If the disk structure changed suddenly, such as when the star's partner passes close by, the resulting tidal forces might release the trapped particles, creating an excess of iron that fall into the star. Okay, but that seems like two different explanations. And the one, to me, seems better. The first one is because when planets collide, then a large amount of iron would be released. If the nearby star is passing by and its gravity causes some kind of tidal force which releases the iron. It doesn't seem like there would be a lot of iron, but anyway. Okay, so much effort currently goes into learning about exoplanets and how they form. So it is obviously very important to see how young planets could be destroyed in interactions with their host stars and other young planets, and what factors determine if they survive. Okay, so this article, should I be like, I don't know, Letterman didn't rate this. He had the top 10. I was thinking of having a rating system for a thing, for an article. So this one, what should I rate it? What should I give it out of 10? It's our first one. It's our Voyager. It's our Explorer. It's our Pathfinder. It's the first article that's ever been rated. Okay, so the article says, we're having first evidence of a young star devouring a planet. So then they're seeing excess iron at certain periods, and they're seeing dimming at certain periods. So the scientists are speculating that planets have collided, but there's another explanation, which is far less likely, or less likely, is that there was iron around this star before, and when its companion passed by, the tidal forces from the gravity disturbed this soup, this mix, and it woke up the iron atoms, and they're jumping out, and they say, here we are, we're here. But that doesn't seem like there would be a lot of iron, and they would be there anyway, so why does it need a planet to steer them by, or to stir them up? So I think the first explanation, two planetesimals collided. Now, how do we rate this article? Maybe a 7 out of 10. It wasn't so exciting. Sometimes these articles, they build up, and you think, wow, there's going to be some super explanation. And then they say, okay, we've studied this for 8 years. We spent half our life studying this, half a professional life. We spent 10 years doing this. And what we conclude is two planets collided, and that dimmed the star's light. So not so earth-shattering, is it? Where, planets collide. I guess that's the explanation for the moon forming, was that some kind of planet or planetesimal hit our Earth, and all the dust that was released, it got shot up into the atmosphere, and then it coalesced and formed the moon. Okay. So this article is 7 out of 10. Next. Okay. So should we rate red nuggets or galactic gold for astronomers? Or gravitational wave event likely signaled the creation of the black hole? Or should I read Hubble and GAIA team up to fuel cosmic conundrum? Let's look at the red nugget. No, let's look at Hubble. Okay, Hubble. No, you know what? I've done Hubble so much. Forget about Hubble. Hubble's boring. No, it's not. It's still the most beautiful thing in our heavens. Okay, so let's look at red nuggets are galactic gold for astronomers. So this is June 21st, 2018. So what is a red nugget? There's an illustration of artist illustration, an X-ray image of red nugget galaxy MRK1216. I think MRK might stand for Markian. But anyway, I'm going to read this article. Red nuggets are galactic gold for astronomers. About a decade ago, astronomers discovered a population of small but massive galaxies called red nuggets. A new study using NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory indicates that black holes have squelched star formation in these galaxies and may have used some of the untapped stellar fuel to grow to unusually massive proportions. So I never heard of a red nugget before. And so it's saying here, black holes have squelched galaxy or star formation in these galaxies. How have they done that? I'll read on and see. Red nuggets were first discovered by Hubble at a great distance from Earth, corresponding to times only about 3 or 4 billion years after the Big Bang. They are relics of the first massive galaxies that formed within only 1 billion years after the Big Bang. Astronomers think that they are the ancestors of the giant elliptical galaxies seen in the local universe. The masses of red nuggets are similar to those of giant elliptical galaxies, but they are only about a fifth of their size. So why is that? Why are they the mass of giant elliptical galaxies, but only a fifth of their size? Well, I'll read on and find. While most red nuggets merge with other galaxies over billions of years, a small number manage to slip through the long history of the cosmos untouched. These unscathed red nuggets represent a golden opportunity to study how the galaxies and the supermassive black holes of the centers act over billions of years of isolation. Ooh, that would be terrible. Galactic isolation, isn't that a terrible thing? So, I'm going to read this when I come back, but for now, we're going to go for a break. So, this is Marco, and sorry to say, you're not going to be listening to the Exploding Head movies. So, I'm going to play something else. So, I'll be back in a few minutes. This is Marco on Astro Talk on CATR 101.9.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag, all types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
What does it mean to be at a disco party? BB's disco. BB's disco party. What does it mean to be at a disco party? BB's disco party. What does it mean to be? What does it mean to be?
Tune in every Tuesday at 3 p.m. to hear music from the current issue of Discorder magazine, that sassy magazine from CITR 101.9 FM, hosted by me, BB, editor-in-chief of Discorder.
To the gang, but she was just another girl in the room.
It's not got my eyes on you, so you could have never take me for four.
You see, right now, with me, we like a dancer, no fool. She want me, she won't ever tell the truth.
Pull up in that automobile with black wheels, red on my feet like somebody blood spill. My swag dangerous, my swag kills. They can't hang with us, they ain't real. Me, I'm the ting with them, want get them girl dead out. Dash them in a casket.
Welcome back. This is Marco, and you're listening to Stefano Don again with Abracadabra on Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
Let's do some quick yes or no questions. Are the following things technically possible? Life on other planets, is that theoretically possible?
Yes.
Okay. What about a Schwarzschild wormhole?
Yes.
Okay, what about this? Me going on a date with Charlize Theron?
No.
What, not at all? In no universe?
No.
In none of the infinite universes does that happen?
No.
It's completely beyond the bounds of scientific possibility is what you're saying?
Yes.
Quick follow-up question. In any of those potential universes, am I the one rejecting her and that's why it doesn't work out?
No. You realize that typing your response is difficult for me, correct?
Okay, sure, yeah. It's just I'm trying to play this out because it just I'm just trying to see if there was any hypothetical hope.
No.
It doesn't matter. But never say never. Okay, if time travel were possible, would you want to go back in time and refuse to do this interview?
Yes.
You truly are an incredibly smart man. Stephen Hawking, thank you so much for your time. You've stated that you believe there could be an infinite number of parallel universes. Does that mean that there is a universe out there where I am smarter than you?
Yes, and also a universe where you're funny.
Okay, all right. Look, if you're so smart, what number am I thinking
13.
Of? 13. It was 13. I was thinking of 13. Okay, that was a lucky guess. What am I thinking right now?
That you've been a huge disappointment to your family.
I wasn't thinking that.
Welcome back. This is Marco. And you know what? I've been trying to look for other Stephen Hawking material. I keep playing that one, but I like Stephen Hawking. So it's funny how a guy can like that can capture the imagination of people. So when he was in his early career, I think he was still a student. He was getting quite ill and nobody knew what it was. He was not in a wheelchair at that time, but he was getting very sick. And I think he wanted to write a book and his publisher said, don't worry, don't waste your time in it. No one's going to read it. No one's going to care. Besides, you're so sick, so take care of yourself first. But Stephen Hawking pressed ahead and in his, I think, The Origin of Time or something like that, in his first book, a lot of people know it, sold over 10 million copies. And then he had another book or two, so he's a famous author. He was basically a celebrity, so he was really, really liked by a lot of people, and he captured the imagination of a lot of people. So just before Stephen Hawking passed away, he said something like this. He believes we have something like 100 years left on Earth. Said because threat of nuclear war, planet, what it's called, global warming, all these things. He says, I don't know if he would bet on it, but he's done bets before. But he said that he thinks that we have just 100 years left in this planet. So he said it's necessary for us to go and colonize at least our solar system, if not other worlds. So we'll see what happens in a few years, what kind of technology would be created or available to zoom us to the stars. And there was one scenario where they said, okay, our nearest stellar neighbor is the, I just had the on the tip of my tongue, now I forgot it. So it's 4.3 light years away. It's a triple star system. They said we can get a rocket that goes much faster than the present technology, send a crew there. So what happened? It would be a one-way journey. And they would build a civilization there when they got there. But the thing is, you got to think of these things. Imagine that it's a big venture. And what if they die out when they get there? There's not enough resources. They can't find a suitable planet to live on. The star is too hot or too cold. They can't grow things. There's not enough oxygen. The gravity is wrong. All these things. So sending a crew of hundreds there, how can you get a spaceship big enough to hold hundreds of people and grow its own food and all the waste and all the dangers? Wow, that's really something for our future, not for now. But think, let's say if it took, they said, 20 years for us to get there, then I believe what would happen is the trip there would have to be predated by a robotic mission or many robotic missions that would go there, scout, find the best place and build something like a habitat. So when the people got there, they'd have something to live in. So their arrival would be predated by a robotic or many robotic missions that would plant the seeds of our next life there. But it could be when the sun heats up and it gets bigger, that maybe the moons of Jupiter or Saturn that are now very cold, I think some of the Saturn moons are minus 250 degrees. So it's very cold there. There's speculation in Jupiter and in the Saturn system that they have moons that have subsurface oceans, so that would take care of the water, wouldn't it? But just imagine that just right now, if humans wanted to go to Mars, that's way far off, could be 15, 20, 25 years. There's little robots, robotic missions or satellites that go to Mars. But imagine sending human beings there to colonize Mars. I mean, they'd have to build a habitat area and protect us from the dust, and there's no very little water. It's not an atmosphere. The gravity is much lower. Wow. So imagine just going to Mars would be such an obstacle. And then they're thinking, well, in 20 years or 30 years, 100 years, we can send a civilization to the next star system. 4.3 light years away. It's not very far, but I got the name of the star system on the tip of my tongue, and it's not coming out. So maybe it'll come out as I read. So get back to our article. This says, Red Nuggets are Galactic Gold for Astronomers. So this is an article on www.nasa.gov, dated June 21st. And so astronomers decade ago discovered a population of small but massive galaxies called red nuggets. The black holes in these galaxies have squelched star formation in these galaxies and may have used some of the untapped stellar fuel to grow to unusually massive proportion. So red nuggets were first discovered by Hubble at a great distance from Earth, corresponding to about 3 or 4 billion years after the Big Bang. So while most red nuggets were, so what's a red nugget? Is it a galaxy or is it something in the galaxy? This doesn't say. Okay, while most red nuggets merged with other galaxies over billions of years, a small number managed to slip through the long history of the cosmos untouched. These unscathed red nuggets represent a golden opportunity to study how the galaxies and the supermassive black hole their centers act over billions of years of isolation. For the first time, Chandra has been used to study the hot gas in two of these isolated red nuggets, MRK1216 and PGC032673. They are located only 295 million and 344 million light years from Earth, respectively, rather than the billions of light years of the first known red nuggets. This X-ray emitting hot gas contains the imprint of activity generated by the supermassive black holes in each of these galaxies. So says Norbert Werner of MTA-Iatvos University in Lendület Hot University and Astrophysics Research Group in Budapest, Hungary. That was hard to say. And quote, these galaxies have existed for 13 billion years without ever interacting with another of its kind. End quote. That's not the end quote. It's going, we are finding that black holes in these galaxies take over and the result is not as good for new stars trying to form. End quote. So for some reason, they found red nugget galaxies. They're not telling us why they call them. At least I haven't seen it yet. And the black holes at their center are squashing star formation. So how do black holes do that? Okay, I'll read on. Astronomers have long known that material falling towards black holes can be redirected outward at high speeds due to intense gravitational and magnetic fields. These high-speed jets can tamp down the formation of stars. This happens because the blasts from the vicinity of the black hole provide a powerful source of heat, preventing the galaxy's hot interstellar gas from cooling enough to allow a large number of stars to form. Okay, so that's an explanation. So this is what I heard, or this is what I remember, that stars form in cool regions. It's got to be cool. So it says that the gravitation or the high-speed jets and the blasts and everything heat everything up, so it does not make it cool enough for the interstellar gas to allow large numbers of stars to form because it can't cool down. Okay, so that's an explanation. So because all the material's falling in, then radiation's coming out, which is heating up the stuff, and stars can't form. But this happens, I guess, in a lot of black holes. What's so different about these black holes? These galaxies called red nuggets. So I'm not sure if the galaxy is a red nugget or the red nuggets are inside. So it says the first line of this article says, about a decade ago, astronomers discovered a population of small but massive galaxies called red nuggets. Okay, so the galaxies themselves are called red nuggets. The temperature of the hot gas is higher in the center of MRK-1216 galaxy compared to its surroundings, showing the effects of recent heating by the black hole. So if everything is hot in the center of the black hole, why cannot stars form outside of this region? Let's read on. Maybe they'll tell us. Also, radio emission is observed from the center of the galaxy, a signature of jets from black holes. Finally, the X-ray emission from the vicinity of the black hole is about 100 million times lower than a theoretical limit on how fast the black hole can grow, called the Eddington limit, where the outward pressure of radiation is balanced by the inward pull of gravity. This low level of X-ray emission is typical for black holes producing jets. All these factors provide strong evidence that activity generated by the central supermassive black hole in these red nuggets galaxy is suppressing the formation of new stars. The black holes and the hot gas have another connection. The authors suggest that much of the black hole's mass have accumulated from the hot gas surrounding both galaxies. The black holes in both MRK-1216 and PGC-032873 are among the most massive known, with estimated masses of about 5 billion times the mass of the Sun, based on optical observation of the speeds of stars near the galaxy center. Furthermore, the masses of the MRK-1216 black hole and possibly the one in PGC-032873 are estimated to be a few percent of the combined mass of all the stars in the central region of the galaxies, whereas in most galaxies, the ratio is about 10 times less. So let's look at this. We have some astronomers. Guess what they do for fun? They look at black holes and they say, okay, look at this radiation coming from this black hole. Look at this or look at that. Because of that, stars are not forming. So, could that have a practical application? So these people have studied for, 10, 15 years of their lives. They're super brilliant. And what do they do with their talents? They look at X-ray or gamma-ray emission of galaxies that are 10 billion light-years away. So I hope this helps humanity somehow. How it does, I am not sure. But don't give ammunition to people that say, astronomy is a waste of time, a waste of effort, a waste of money. I can see how some things are very beneficial, but this is something that's billions of light years away, and they're looking at radiation from this and saying, this is now called a red nugget. Okay. So have fun, people. Okay, so the black holes and the hot gas, I don't know if I should have made those comments, but the black holes and the hot gas may have another connection. The author suggests that much of the black hole's mass may have accumulated from hot gas surrounding both galaxies. I just read that, so I'll go to the next paragraph. I'm sorry. I made too many comments, and I got distracted. So anyway, this is these black holes are about 5 billion times the mass of our sun. Pretty big. Pretty big suckers. Pretty big black holes. Okay, so says Kiran Lachaura, also of MIT Etowah University, and quote, apparently left to their own devices, black holes can act a bit like a bully. Not only do they prevent new stars from forming, but they also may take some of the galactic material and use it to feed themselves. Okay, so we talked about black holes and a lot of other things, so thank you for listening. Let's see, this computer is not friendly to me. There we go. So we have another show coming in. I'm not sure what it is, but I will sign off and thank you for listening. This has been Marco. You have been listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.